I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a terrific film series beginning on the 22nd of December to the 1st of the year. It's called Woody Allen, Four Seasons, Woody in Winter at the Vancouver International Film Festival's Van City Theatre. It's a year-long retrospective on the films of Woody Allen, films that have won him three Oscars for screenwriting and one for directing. The Woody in Winter segment features the following films: Hannah and Her Sisters, The Purple Rose of Cairo, Radio Days, Crimes and Misdemeanors, Shadows and Fog, Everyone Says I Love You, Love and Death, and the fantastic documentary on Allen by Robert Whitey. Joining me now is Tom Charity. He is the film programmer at the Van City Theatre and a freelance film critic whose work has appeared on CNN.com and LoveFilm.com. He's also a contributing editor to CinemaScope magazine and a contributor to Sight and Sound. He joins me to discuss the work of Woody Allen, the prolific filmmaker who's averaged a film a year since 1969, this much-anticipated film series, and more. Michael Vandenbos will be introducing these films. The website for tickets and information is at viff.org. Please welcome to the Plant on the Land program Tom Charity. Mr. Charity, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So this is a year-long series, so I guess it would be the four seasons, I guess, right?
You got it.
Yeah, and you won't run out of Woody Allen films to show, I'm guessing.
He's been a busy boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the thinking. I mean, I had been thinking about doing a Woody Allen retrospective for a long time. I mean, he's a major filmmaker and an obvious choice in some ways. But it's a little daunting when you're looking at such an extensive body of work. So it stretches well beyond 40 titles now as director. And then there are other projects where obviously he's made some significant films as an actor, and there's some TV work too. So we're a one-screen venue, and you think, gosh, where do you even begin? I just had the idea of breaking it up over these four seasons, and that really was the clincher for me. It just appealed to me. It makes it much more manageable.
Yeah.
And just puts a different perspective on these films. I mean, they're very well known, very familiar films, and it just seemed like a nice way to put them in a different light.
And so how do you select the movies that are in this first batch, the Woody and Winter series? I mean, is there a theme that they sort of run along, I guess? Or?
So once I had the idea, I started thinking about how that would actually work. And, of course, there's no hard and fast way of doing it. Inevitably, you end up bending your own rules. But obviously there are certain films which are set and where the time of year is very significant. The most obvious example in the filmography is probably September. You have a pretty good idea where that should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Midsummer Night's Sex Comedy is pretty obvious too.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you think about it, there are quite a lot of his films where the time of year is really part of the mood. I mean, it's just something that, as a smart filmmaker, he does bring into his work. And part of that, you know, may not be from the at the screenwriting stage, but it's something that does end up reflected in his films, because he likes to shoot on the streets in real locations. And if he's filming in the fall, and for many years he did film in the fall, then that becomes part of the atmosphere and the feeling of these films. So that's part of it. And with the winter films specifically, I would point to, for example, Crimes and Misdemeanors is a film. It's not a very Christmassy, holiday kind of movie necessarily, but it is a dark midwinter kind of film, and indeed, if you look closely, you can see a few Christmas trees poking in the background in some shots. Other films take place across several seasons,
yeah.
and they gave me, you know, a little, I mean, I guess I could have put them anywhere. So Hannah and Her Sisters, for example, takes place over the course of a year and would make sense in any season, I think. So in that case, I'm thinking, well, you want to balance. You want to balance for in the winter films of some cold, wintry titles like Shadows and Fog and Crimes and Misdemeanors, but it would be very nice to have some of the warmer, more accessible titles in there too, because you want to bring some people in and give them a good time.
Yeah.
So Hannah and Her Sisters goes into the winter season. Purple Rose of Cairo is a film that again takes place over several months and possibly even years, because it's an autobiographical kind of anecdotal film inspired by Fellini's Amarcord, and so its time period is a little hazy because it mixes larger-than-life fantasy sequences and other sequences direct from Woody's own boyhood memories growing up in New York in the war years, World War II years.
Mm-hmm.
And but you look at that film again, and the beautiful climactic scene of Radio Days is New Year's on the roof of a New York recording, well, a New York kind of ballroom. Everybody ends up on the roof for New Year's. And it's such a beautiful scene, and I just felt that would be a lovely way to kind of mark New Year's. So, indeed, that's playing on December the 30th here.
There's a great line at the end of that movie about the voices, and that he can still hear them from time to time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as the years go on, they sort of fade away. But, I mean, that's life, I suppose, right?
Yeah, it's a beautiful film about time passing, for sure.
Yeah.
I just want to quickly mention another one in that, just to show how the thinking went with this. Love and Death is a film which, again, has several periods. It's kind of hard to pin down when you watch it, just where it belongs. But I think fairly late in the day, Alan scrapped the score that he had planned for that film and went with Prokofiev all the way through. And, of course, it's got these sleigh bells, and it gives it a really Christmassy feeling. So that's why Love and Death is in the winter program.
Yeah. The films obviously reflect who Woody Allen is, what he thinks. They also, his contemporary films, Blue Jasmine, for example, his latest, they have his views, say, on contemporary issues. But in the, I guess, the seven films that you have here, as well as the documentary, we see that as well, don't we? We see certainly Woody Allen himself and what he thinks in the movies that you've selected for this program.
Well, I think, you know, he's a true auteur. He's one of the few American filmmakers who has written as well as directed and often starred in all of his films. I mean, so he's a complete auteur, and inevitably his personality comes through. I mean, I think he's gone through stages in his life where he's very much wanted to downplay the autobiographical nature of his work and denied it. But I think it's it's undeniable. It's very clear that he is a very neurotic New Yorker, no surprise, and that he's kind of obsessed with sex, especially in the earlier films, with women. And he's of a philosophical, intellectual bent, and all these things come through in all the work across the decades. I think it's also true that some the early funny films famously have a very different feel to the films he was making in the early 80s, and they have a very different feel to the films he's made in the last 10 years. So I think you can say that there are different phases to the work. And it's kind of interesting to smash them up against each other and just see how he's evolved as a filmmaker and as a thinker.
And you see the influences, and I mean, if you're a student of film, you see the influences the stuff that he liked reflected in the film. You've mentioned Fellini already. There's the influence of Bergman, the German filmmakers, Marx, and even Fred Astaire in the musical. Everyone Says I Love You.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. He's somebody who's really worn his influences on his sleeve. And he's also, brought in the cinematographers of those filmmakers he's admired so much. So he made several films with Sven Nykvist, Bergman's great cameraman, and again with Carlo Di Ponti, who shot several of Fellini's films. So that's real flattery and emulation, I guess. And he's been pretty modest, actually, about his own achievements in comparison with those greats. But I think, actually, at his best, Woody Allen's a really, truly great filmmaker and on a par with them.
Is there any other director-screenwriter who is as prolific as he is? I mean, it has been a film a year since 69, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You tell me, is there anybody else?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe in Britain, Michael Winterbottom is shaping up to be of that kind of pace, and I don't think you could, I certainly wouldn't make the claim that Winterbottom's work is of a comparable stature. I think it's partly a nature of comedy that he's been able to do that, but to have that fecundity, that creative imagination, is quite astonishing to be able to keep up that pace. Clint Eastwood, I guess, is close.
Yeah, but Eastwood works what, every couple of years with the movie. I mean, it seems to me, having seen the documentary, that he works, that he has a certain schedule in terms of how he works. That as soon as he's done the movie he's working on, he's on to the next one, right?
Yeah, and they're kind of contained shoots. I mean, I guess he's not asking for Scorsese type budgets, which Scorsese certainly doesn't hang about either. But his films are perhaps more demanding of producers in terms of how you put them together.
Now, Mia Farrow is an actress who appears in a number of the films that are playing in this program, Woody in Winter. We sort of know the personal relationship between Allen and Farrow, but in terms of what she brought to these films as an actress and what he was looking for and her own talents as an actress, I mean, now she's an activist, so she doesn't really act very much. But at the time, she was a pretty good actress, wasn't she?
Yeah, really. It was a great collaboration that really extended both of them, I think. I think when you look at some of the films that Woody Allen has starred in, I think it's actually a weakness of them is his own limitations as an actor. He's given, he's very funny. He can be he's a great clown. But I think that when it comes to the more poignant notes that he wanted to hit, when some of the films are going for pathos more than laughs, then he was his own biggest problem. And in Mia Farrow, he found somebody who could handle the comedy, but was much more appealing and much more sympathetic and empathetic and vulnerable than he ever has been on screen. And so she became his not just a muse, but also, it's a stand-in. It's been a problem when he's taken a bit of a back seat as an actor over the last 15 years as he's got older, but oftentimes the male leads have responded to his dialogue, which has a very specific rhythm and cadence, by turning in kind of cut-price Woody Allen impressions, impersonations almost, which can be kind of jarring and doesn't really sit right when you watch Kenneth Branagh in Celebrity, for example, probably the most egregious example. Whereas Maya Farrow really didn't come up as a problem because she was enough of her own person, her own woman, that you don't feel she's imitating Woody, but she has a very similar kind of rhythm and slots into it very naturally, I think.
In terms of Alan's own performances as an actor, in a couple of these movies, like Crimes and Misdemeanors and Hannah and Her Sisters, he has, he's quite good in them.
Mm-hmm.
Annie Hall, I guess, is the one that he's most remembered for. But some of the other ones where he didn't write or direct them, like The Front, for example. I mean, that's one that I really like of his performances. I haven't seen this new one, the Fading Gigolo movie. Have you seen that one?
I haven't.
No, and even when he played the in the TV thing, the Sunshine Boys, I thought he was quite good in that. Is he underrated as an actor because he's sort of known for directing?
I mean,
he's playing himself essentially, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he does that tremendously well and better than anybody else. I think that's been proven. I think he's certainly been able to turn in fine performances, and I agree with the three that you've kind of singled out there. I think he's extremely good in Crimes and Misdemeanors, and in Annie Hall and Hannah and Her Sisters, which are have a similar kind of feel to them. He's very relaxed. Manhattan too.
Yeah.
He's very relaxed and assured in a and really holds the film. He gives certainly Annie Hall and Manhattan. He gives those films a center, even as Diane Keaton has a very showy role and is wonderful in Manhattan. But in Annie Hall.
Yeah.
But I think Alan just has a little problem when it's outside of a fairly narrow range of emotion. He's very good in the last scene of Crimes and Misdemeanors with Martin Landau. Mm-hmm. You remember that, where they finally meet these two twin stories that the film has kept pretty much apart for the preceding 2 hours, finally converge. He and Martin Landau meet, and Landau tells him a story, and Woody Allen actually doesn't do very much in that scene, but the stillness is really very effective. Just stopping and listening, that's something you don't see him doing very often on film.
I guess two contemporary Woody Allen films that people like, people talk about a lot, are Midnight in Paris and Match Point. And I guess in this series, if you liked Midnight in Paris, you'd probably like Purple Rose of Cairo. If you liked Match Point, you probably would like Crimes and Misdemeanors. Is that too narrow a sort of line to draw between the films?
I don't think so. I agree with what you said. I think that there are definite affinities there. And in fact, one of the things we're thinking of doing at the end of this series in the fall is to perhaps put together some double bills and look at those kind of parallels more closely. And I think those would be obvious ones to do.
From time to time when I have guests on, they're not necessarily people in film or, just a... Like, I asked Jan Wong one time what her favorite Woody Allen movie was, so I'll do the same for you. Charlie Demers, the comedian, says that you have to pick, one funny one and then one dark one. Have you got two favorites?
Well, my favorite is definitely Broadway Danny Rose.
Right.
Which is kind of both, I think.
Yeah, that would be, that's a both, yeah.
It's a film that I think often gets overlooked because it's the very definition of a small film. I mean, it's short, it's black and white, and perhaps because the showy role there is not played by a well-known actor, Nick Apolloforte, I think his name was, and Maya Farrow, of course. That for me is just almost a perfect film. I just think it's very funny. It connects with Woody's background in showbiz, vaudeville, that kind of 50s roots where he came from. He plays this agent, showbiz agent, who's represents is too loyal to his motley clients who have a habit of abandoning him as soon as they get a break. So he's left with these kind of misfits, and over the course of the film, that story is played out once more with a kind of Dean Martin type lounge singer who is himself a throwback to the 1950s, really. So I think it's got a kind of nostalgia and affection there, mixed in with a very smart, wisecracking, acerbic satire of that scene. And it's got the love story with Maya. And I think those early 80s films, for me, are really where he was at his peak. I think it's Purple Rose of Cairo would be a close second or third for me. And everybody loves Hannah and Her Sisters, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think all those films are the complete package. But perhaps Purple Rose and Broadway Danny Rose, the two Rose films, have a sadness to them, a melancholy, which I really respond to.
And the worst of Woody Allen, would those be the films that were made, say, in the late 90s, early 2000s? Like, I'm thinking of Curse of the Jade Scorpion, which I couldn't even finish.
Yeah.
Is that the
I think that's definitely his nadir, yes. Yeah. Although, you know, there are several really, really bad films from that period to the point where I was ready to give up on him. And they won't be featuring it in any of these four little programs we're putting together. There's no point, as far as I'm concerned, there's no point in being a completist just for the sake of it. And I don't want to show bad movies here.
What about Small Time Crooks? Did you like that one?
I think it's a half successful film. It kind of breaks down into two or three parts, and from what I remember, I enjoyed the first part and then felt that the film took a very, very bad turn.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that I remember laughing out loud, like really laughing out loud in some parts. I mean, you're right that it's not, you know, it's not a great film, but I mean, there's some good moments in it. When a new Woody Allen movie comes out every year, what do you look for?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think you go in these days, you go in hoping that it's going to be one of the good ones, because he has become more erratic over the last 15 years. And I must confess, I was surprised that he managed to pull himself out of that slump. I thought he was a spent force. Creatively, he seemed to be treading water, going back to scripts that perhaps were projects he'd abandoned in his earlier days, and I think it was a hard transition for him, no longer having Mia Farrow there to call on, and obviously there was a great kind of public fall from grace, and I think it knocked him back, but he did get back up, and I think Vicky Cristina Barcelona and Midnight in Paris to some extent, and Match Point for sure, these are all among his finest films.
Blue Jasmine, where does that rank, do you think, in the filmography?
Yeah, I think it's strong. I need to go back and see it again, but I think there's no denying that Cate Blanchett is terrific in it, and I think that conceit of doing a contemporary update on Streetcar Named Desire and setting it against this backdrop of the new depression worked extremely well. I have some problems with the way that the working class blue collar kind of San Francisco milieu was painted. That seemed a little dated and out of touch to me. And I think some of his more recent films, some of his attitude towards the female characters can be grating. I mean, he's written some great female parts too. I mean, Mia Farrow is the obvious example, but also Diane Keaton and others have had terrific, fully dimensional roles, courtesy of Woody Allen. And Jenna Rollins in Another Woman would be another example. But I think there's a certain sexism that can creep into some of his humor as well, which is a little shows his age, perhaps.
Yeah, in Blue Jasmine, I read this tweet last week from I guess he's the editor of The Hollywood Reporter. He saw the film again, one of these screeners, and it sort of shows how out of touch Woody Allen is, I guess it was Peter Sarsgaard that went out with the Cate Blanchett character in Blue Jasmine without having Googled her. And I guess nowadays that's what people do.
I guess so.
But, I mean, that he wouldn't do that, I guess, shows Allen sort of, yeah. He doesn't use the internet, I guess.
It's a fair point. Really is a fair point. Yeah, in that documentary, Woody Allen, a documentary, it shows that he still types his scripts on the same typewriter he's been using since the late 1950s.
And he clips them out, literally copies and pastes them, doesn't he? Yeah. I can't wait for this series. There's a few films here that I want to see, and I appreciate the conversation today, and we'll urge people to go out to the Van City Theater.
I want to hear what your favorite is.
Well, I was making a list here. I'd have to pick five because I can't narrow it down to two. But I really love Manhattan.
Yeah.
Hannah and Her Sisters, obviously.
Yeah.
Match Point. Everyone Says I Love You.
Yeah. Oh, really? I love that one too, but not everybody does.
Yeah, well, I guess I like musicals, and yeah. You know, the fact that they sing their own songs in that, I think I quite enjoy that. And just in terms of laughs, I like Small Time Crooks.
Really? That high?
Yeah. But in terms of his performance, I mean, I would include The Front there. I think The Front is a much better film, but I mean, that's not really his film, right? I mean, he yeah. acted in it, but...
Yeah.
But that's one of my favorites because of his performance in it, and obviously Zero Mostel.
Now you're making me think I have to go back and watch Small Time Crooks again to see if I should put it in later.
See, that's the thing. How do you watch these movies? Do you watch them more than once, or?
I haven't gone back and rewatched every single one because, again, there are so many.
See, I've only seen Small Time Crooks once, and so I remember that I enjoyed it at the time. So maybe if I watched it again, I wouldn't like it as much.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly a big fan of Everyone Says I Love You. I think it's a delightful film, and I'm really pleased that we're able to show that. At the same time, we're running this Jacques Demy retrospective, and I have no idea if Alan likes Jacques Demy, but there definitely seems to be a Jacques Demy feel to Everyone Says I Love You, and so it's very nice to be able to show that just a little bit apart from Young Girls of Rochefort and Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Indeed, yeah. VIFF.org is the website for more. It's running from the 22nd of December to the 1st of the year. It's Woody in Winter. The programmer at the Van City Theatre, the Vancouver International Film Festival, Tom Charity, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.